This is the other sin. I would call it sin. It's more than addiction, right? It's more sin, right? Because your competition has 25 different products and you happen to have 5 products. Our ailment is because we don't have the other 20 products. That's why we are not winning in the market in our category, right? Absolutely garbage.
Welcome to the Winning with Shopify podcast. This is the podcast to help you scale your Shopify store into a money-making machine. This episode is brought to you by OmniSend, trusted by more than 80,000 Shopify brands just like yours. Everything you need to scale your email marketing and ROI. Send emails, newsletters, and SMS. Build your email list with landing pages and pop-ups. One-click Shopify integration. Get 24/7 email and live chat support all with OmniSend. Now, over to your host, Nick Truman.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Winning with Shopify podcast. It's so good to have so many of you tuning in. If you're listening to this, well done. You've tuned into one of the most awesome podcasts, not because of me. I know I'm the host and I've got a slightly biased opinion on this, but it's great to have you guys tuning in. We've been talking to so many of you guys over the last few weeks and months, and we want to talk to more of you. I can't say what, because we want some independent feedback from you guys before we tell you what we're thinking of doing. But we are about to launch something quite big. When I say about to, the next kind of 2 to 4 months, something big is going to be landing. We're going to be doing some global advertising around this thing, and it's going to be first and foremost for all of you that are listening to the podcast. So we want to ask you guys some questions. We've hired an amazing person, my new colleague Lee, and Lee wants to talk to you all. So if you can spare 30 to 60 minutes, I'd love you just to go to winningwithshopify.com/help. So just winningwithshopify.com/help and just click on the link there. There's just going to be a quick link. Go into Calendly and book some time. We just want to ask you questions about your business, some of your challenges at the moment, what you love and hate about Shopify, and some of the things you're trying to achieve, but you're really struggling to. And what we're going to do with this new thing we're launching is we want to help you guys. But in terms of shaping that and developing that, we need your help. Second thing to plug quickly is if you haven't already, sign up to our newsletter. We are doing a monthly webinar at the moment at my business Spec, my marketing agency. We focus on PPC and SEO, but we're doing webinars on a whole range of other things. Some of them will give you opportunities to have a live Q&A with some of our amazing guests that we have on the show as well. At the time of recording this, we would have just had one of our webinars. And at the time of recording this, we've got hundreds of people signed up to it. So come get involved. The Q&As have been absolutely crazy in terms of volume of questions, amazing questions. And we've not managed to cover them all on the show itself either. So you want to come chat to me live, come and chat to some of our guests live, join the newsletter, and you'll get a box at the bottom of the newsletter each week, which will tell you when the next webinar is as well. Enough from me. That's all my shameless plugs to one side. But please do action those two things. I'd really appreciate it. That would be amazing. Today, I'm talking to an absolute guru of e-commerce, and I'm so excited to have him on the show. His name's Sabir, and he's from Growth by Sabir. Sabir, welcome to the show.
Nick, it's great to be here, and I think we're going to have a blast.
I think we are. We literally, just to give you guys a little insight, we've just checked what time our next meetings are in case this runs over. So I'm looking forward to it. But Sabir, to explain a little bit why I'm so excited about this, give us just a quick overview to your background, and then we'll kind of dive in a little bit more into what you're doing today.
Absolutely, Nick. So my name is Sabir Samarkand. I'm the founder and chief growth officer of Growth by Sabir. It's an advisory firm that helps e-commerce businesses grow. So my track record, I have been there since the birth of e-commerce, 25 plus years now. So claim to fame, $1 billion in additional in incremental revenue for e-commerce brands that I've touched. We even helped launch two of the verticals for Amazon, worked with the sharks on Shark Tank. For the UK audience, it would be equivalent of Dragon's Den, you know. So I've worked with them to scale their businesses. I was a former co-founder of VaynerCommerce alongside Gary Vaynerchuk, Gary V. Worked with a lot of celebrities also, worked with a lot of entrepreneurs. So claim to fame again, it's 2x to 10x in 12 weeks.
Wow.
Of your daily sales. The reason I am able to do that is because of just relentless tweaking my framework, which I call the 8D method.
Absolutely. And we're going to come on to that today, guys. We're going to talk through the top eight things that Sabir's been through over the years. I'm going to comment on them, give some examples, some feedback and others. But Sabir's going to very much be driving today's episode, which is really exciting. And $1 billion in revenue. I mean, we run a webinar literally just a few days ago when this recording went out, as I said at the start, where Caroline, who's the original host of the podcast, and myself, and anyone who missed it, it'll be on YouTube shortly as well. We spoke about how to get you to your first million, but I mean, $1 billion is like it's three more zeros. It's a completely different game there. I guess before we dive in, like, obviously you've got your advisory today, and I think these eight methods we're going to talk about, I'm super excited about, but is there anything that springs to mind? Apologies, I'm springing this question on you. Anything that springs to mind that you think is like one of the biggest, the absolute number one things that you find brands are punching against in terms of some sort of shelf, a limit in their growth, something they can't push through? If you had to put your finger on that, what's one thing before we run through the main eight principles or the main eight dimensions of e-commerce growth, what's that one thing that you find most brands are just punching against and are struggling to knock it down?
In the ecosystem of Shopify, the number one thing that I see, I call it the Facebook Instagram slot machine.
The slot machine. Okay.
So
tell us more.
So the Shopify sellers, they put their coins into the Facebook ads or Instagram ads. And at the time of this recording right now, right, last week was a disaster for every Facebook ad advertiser, right? And especially the ones that like focus on only one channel, and I will consider Facebook ads as one channel, right? When they put all of their eggs in one basket, a lot of businesses suffered last week, like disastrous. It was disastrous. It was a March 21st outage that they had with their advertisers, and what they did was when they started turning it back on, it sent a ton of unqualified traffic. The biggest ones that suffered the most were the Advantage Plus type of advertisers.
Which is really embarrassing, isn't it? Because that was Facebook's big response to, and this is my world now, is performance max marketing on Google Ads. Performance max was the AI, the machine learning channel. You just kind of, you chuck it all in. It doesn't give you any sort of feedback apart from you've got a 10-to-1 ROI and everyone says hallelujah and runs to the bank. But yeah, the outage was mad because Advantage Plus was supposed to be the response to that. And it's like, oh, by the way, guys, it's not bulletproof.
Yeah, here's my view on the Advantage Plus. For a newbie, it's good. But for anyone above that, it's lazy marketing, right? To be very frank, you know, when you select United States, and United States is a pretty big market, right? For a lot of e-commerce sellers. So when you select under Advantage Plus, you say, okay, I want to localize to United States. It says, oh, we are targeting 280 million people. How is
Which
that
is
targeting?
Irrelevant.
It basically yeah. tells me that you are limiting it by the daily budget you set, you know? So the thing is, when you're starting out and you want to do that because you want to learn from it, but the problem is some of these strategies or even tactics become very addicting, right? Then you go like, oh, you know what, I'm going to do is just increase my budget, just keep on increasing my budget. But when disaster hits, that's when they see that they cannot scale anymore, right? And you run out very quickly. It's not like, oh, the ceiling is going to be sometime later. You hit the ceiling very quickly, you know, and you hit the wall there. And that's why you have to, nothing beats. I mean, AI is definitely coming about. Everybody is very hot on it. I mean, you could see it. There are a lot of scammy NASDAQ listings and stuff like that, public companies that have changed their name to .AI, you know, just to say that, oh, we're doing it. Because the thing is, I've seen these things come around all the time. Like when Ethereum became popular, everybody got the .eth. You know, when the crypto thing was happening, oh, we do blockchain. People changed their name to blockchain. And e-commerce, the same thing. Like I even saw it in the e-commerce era, right? AI is coming about. And by the way, in my advisement, I do give the right advice related to AI to use ChatGPT, Gemini, Claude, all of these tools very effectively. So that as an entrepreneur, you know, the 17 arms you need to get things done, right? Not the two arms God gave you. AI helps you, but you have to understand how to build that and how to use that properly.
I love the message of that, though. They're like, don't be reliant on one channel. The amount of businesses we've seen that have phoned us up and said, like, you guys are really good at PPC. Like, my PPC was Google Ads was the only thing driving any revenue in, and it stopped. My whole business is like, you know, hanging off a cliff. And you're like, well, why were you so reliant on the thing in the first place? I mean, we've had a client recently where their PPC ROI, we've doubled it in a year. And they've then said, but our year-on-year sales, like we've spent so much more on Google Ads, but our revenue is about the same. So we did a deeper dive and we said like, okay, celebrities aren't wearing your products anymore. That's how you built the business, and they're not doing that anymore. Social media is sending you nothing. You've got no repeat orders anymore. People used to buy four times a year from you. They now buy once. So 75% of repeat order value just gone. And it was, I mean, that's one thing we do with some of these smaller trying to scale or starting to scale businesses is they don't know what they don't know. And so actually digging through the data and give them those clear insights, which data is not the easiest thing to analyze, especially with Performance Max, Advantage Plus, AI doing its thing. AI will just go like, yeah, I can get you better revenue. What it doesn't tell you is I'm going to have to lower your budget to do that. So you've lost the volume, or, you know, there's all these different things it will start to play with. But you're absolutely right. If you use AI correctly, and even this recording that you're all listening to, we've used a level of AI to help create a transcript, to help pull out different clips we're going to push out on social media. What you're listening to, though, I can assure you, is two humans currently recording literally on Zoom. That is where we're recording and having a conversation. But we're using the AI tactically to enhance how we chop the content, edit the content. As you say, I've only got two arms. So the other 15, as you rightly said, that need to do bits of editing, chopping, listening to the whole thing and deciding, you know, based on previous performance, what's the most important clip. There's some really smart things I think you can do with AI. But I'm excited to hear about these eight dimensions. So Sabir, tell us what the first one is. Let's kick off into number one.
Sure. Number one is actually near and dear to your heart, Nick.
Excellent.
Is performance optimization, right? The e-commerce is all about data. You have to remove ego. You have to remove hearsay, tactics. That's all BS, right? It doesn't. I can tell you, if I were to summarize 25 years, if you do tactic hopping, and that's basically watching some YouTube guru or TikTok guru or even LinkedIn postings and stuff, tell you, oh, this is a pretty cool thing. You should try out.
Click the magic button.
Look at the views on that thing. 10,000 other people, 50,000, 500,000 other people saw that already. It's not a tactic anymore, like strategic. The platform might figure it out, and then there you go. That tactic, now you're putting money behind it and you just wasted a ton of money, time. And so no tactics, work on strategies. One of the things you just hit on, which is really, really important advice, is that you own the data. When you have Shopify, you own the data. It's not like if you're a seller on Amazon, that's different. You don't own the data because you're selling to Amazon's customer, right? But with Shopify, you have the incredible privilege of owning your data. But a lot of businesses that I see, they don't, in this performance optimization, when I look at it, we chop up every different aspects at different angles. So performance optimization is the first dimension. And in this, I can tell you that one of our recent clients, in their first week, Aurum Brothers is a case study. It's on growthbysabir.com. So if you want to go and hear from one of the founders, you can hear it from directly from his mouth. You know, in the first week, we unlocked 50% growth.
Wow.
50% growth in week one.
Yeah, yeah.
So the kickoff was actually, I need you to do these things, you know? And then they implemented those recommendations, which are foundational in nature. They're not tactics, right? Because what does that mean? The stuff that we implement in week one continues giving dividends through week 12, through 12 months, through 36 months.
Yeah, yeah.
So they're not like, oh, it works for a week or two and then dies, you know? And there are a lot of agencies, they do a lot of tactic type things to show you growth and you get excited. And then 1 week comes, you do a weekly update. What happened? Oh, we're negative, whatever, you know?
I've seen
Because the thing is, it was all tactics.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it was not strategy that was sound there. So one of the value that I would like to give here is that all the listeners, Shopify listeners, should, and this applies to, by the way, WooCommerce and Magento and if other platforms, but Shopify just gives you the platform to make changes very quickly. If you have a WooCommerce site, you have to get in touch with your developer and stuff like that. It's
same in Magento and Hybris. And,
it's a longer time to market. It just takes time, right? But you know, some people know how to do that, so that's great. So number one thing you should do, every listener should do right now, go to gtmetrics.com, you know, gtmetrix.com. It's not my tool. It's a publicly available tool. Just plug in your homepage and also open up another tab, go to another GT Metrics and open up one of your representative product page, like let's say your bestseller, right? Run the report. If these two landing pages are scoring anything below B, right? Ideally, you should be in A because it consolidates all the performance reports together and then gives you the results. So just run that report. If you get anything below B, it actually tells you where the issues are, right? The number one advice there, like you have to get your score up B+, basically. You know, B+ or A would be the ideal number. Most of your KPIs on that report should be green, right? Nothing should be red. And once you do that, just make sure that one of the key numbers is your full page load, fully loaded page, and also your first paint. Make sure that those numbers are lower. So here's Nick, you deal with performance optimization. I usually ask this question in an audience, right? So I would like you to play the audience. what do you think in 2024 the attention span of a consumer is?
It depends how you're measuring it. And I use the word depends on every answer I ever give, like a politician. I would say that I think you probably got somewhere between sort of 2 to 5 seconds to capture their attention. And in terms of them spending time on the page, you've probably only got 10 seconds of them. Once they're captured, you've probably got another 10 seconds, I would say, then of, okay, now you're engaged and you're actually going to read how this product works, what it is, or you're engaged enough to go, this isn't the right product, but I can see a very simple way to get to another product, which would be better, or to go and view the range going, I like this clock, but it's the wrong color. So you've got other colored clocks, or you've got a breadcrumb, click straight back, would be my guess.
Okay. So you're close on the lower end of it. So I would say that, and I'll explain when I tell you this number, it's 1.7 seconds.
Wow.
Okay. 1.7 seconds. In that 1.7 seconds, you have to grab their attention. Because if you don't grab their attention, forget about a beautiful video you have down the page. Nobody's watching it, right? This is one of the reasons the KPI that matters the most in e-commerce is bounce rate, not e-commerce conversion rate. It's bounce rate. Because that metric will tell you if you're wasting your FB ads dollars and Google ads dollars and all the paid ads or even free traffic that you're bringing through your email campaigns. If there's a bounce rate on that, you know that there's an issue.
Because you're literally paying for clicks in from those platforms. So if 80% of people you're paying to get clicks from, and just to give people listening an idea of click costs, you could be paying £1, £5, £10 or dollars per click. So if you're paying, say, $5 a click and you drive 100 people in and 20 of them stay on the page, but 80 of them leave, so you've got an 80% bounce rate, 80% of that budget instantly wasted.
Instantly.
Like absolutely instantly. So when I'm pitching to clients, one of the easiest things, if I'm honest, to pull out and say, well, let's focus on improving that. If we improve that, you get better quality of traffic and you spend your money better. It's pretty simple.
Every second you add to the 1.7 seconds, you're increasing your bounce rate by 30%, and thus you're reducing your conversion rate by 30%. So there's real money behind optimizing that these two landing pages. Because likely, either you're going to send them on a home page or you're going to send them on a product page. If you have a lot of products in categories, you might send them to collection pages in Shopify terminology, right?
Yeah, absolutely. The only thing I'd add as well is if you improve that metric, I mean, we call it page speed, but obviously there's more to it than just the page speed itself. As you say, it's the way the page loads, which is what CLS and first content paint for is the first large item that's going to load. And then how long does the largest item take? Google looks at all of this. And if all these things are low, you have the best product in the world, best performing website in terms of conversion rate and everything else. But if it's loading slowly, Google's not going to want to rank you. It's not the only metric. If you've got like the only place you could buy that product in the entire world, they're probably going to put you at first and people looking for that product. But who has that these days? Like the most industries are saturated. So yeah, completely agree with fast websites.
And organic SEO actually looks at the bounce rate.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
the
yeah.
exit rate. You know, yeah, so how many people got to that page and left? Mm-hmm. They went back to organic results and they say, okay. And Google knows because there's Google Analytics on almost every Shopify site, you know, so they already know that.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other thing as well is if you've got a high bounce rate on Google Ads, for example, I don't know if it's exactly the same on Meta, but on Google Ads, you've got a high bounce rate. It lowers a score that's out of 10 called quality score on your keywords. And on things like Performance Max and Google Shopping, you can't even see what the quality score is, but Google will be charging you more per click. So we've done things where we've like deployed actually quite an extreme page speed optimization update. Like, you know, we've reduced code, reduced image sizes, made things load quickly. And as you say, give them a big bang so they don't bounce. We've done all of that and we've seen click costs come down by sort of 20 to 50%. You know, I'm hypothetically putting these numbers out, but 20 to 50% wouldn't be surprised by that at all. We've probably had a few cases where we've done it even more. Some cases less because it's not the biggest, or maybe our quality score is high already. It's a good product. It's just a bit slow. So the page speed's not made too much difference, but.
Yeah. So these two landing pages, the thing is, because any traffic that you generate doesn't matter. So I don't even touch in this dimension. I'm not at the initial stage. All I'm doing is performance optimization. And the priority, besides getting the overall score down, you have to up to the B or an A, is also making sure that these two pages, in fact, the entire site, needs to be mobile first. In the US, if you're targeting the US market, the number one device you need to think about is Apple iPhone. By far, Apple iPhone is the number one device in the United States.
Yep, same in the UK.
I think I just saw a news that Apple is getting sued for monopoly because of that device. So I can tell you this statement I'm making, I learned it from analytics, right? And I've been doing it for years now. But now they're getting sued for monopolizing the US market with the Apple iPhone.
Which is mad. They made a good device. Let people use
it. Business reasons that I'm telling you that you need to focus on that, right? So that's a pretty loaded statement. I have made this statement even before when they were not sued. So what you need to do is, it's not, if you're hearing, oh, our site is mobile responsive, this is not 2008, you know, it's 2024. It needs to be mobile first, and not only mobile first. In the US market, if that's your target market or majority of your traffic, you need to make sure that on Apple iPhone, that 1.7 seconds and every feature of your site works on Apple iPhone Safari specifically, right? So then secondarily, you can look at other adoption based on your analytics, Samsung Galaxy, Google Pixel, Nokia, and so on and so forth. And if you're outside of US, like a lot of European countries and Asian markets and stuff like that, it's the opposite. Like the Android devices dominate those platforms, right? To make sure that your site actually works really extremely well and images appear. So that 1.7 seconds, you have to take into consideration 4G LTE type connection, which most people in the United States have. And now it's moving towards 5G. And you have to make sure that it's mobile first. So if your web designer has a beautiful Mac on their desktop, right? And they're showing you how your brand looks amazing on desktop. As an e-commerce business, the branding aspect of it is almost secondary. You have to make sure that you're mobile first on the Apple iPhone in the United States market.
I am forever kicking design agencies and start showing stuff on a desktop and go, doesn't it look beautiful? And I almost just kind of get the crop tool and go like, right, let's crop it to mobile.
Take your phone out.
Which bit of this am I looking at? Yeah, which bit am I looking at? Yeah, or get my phone available.
In some categories, you're talking about 60 to 80% of your e-commerce revenue coming from an Apple iPhone.
Yeah, yeah. We found a tool a while ago. It's unfortunately discontinued. It's really annoying. There was a tool we used to use that was, I think it was called like iPhone Scanner. And it scans your website as an iPhone, tells you all the things that don't work on it. If it's a link that, or like a read more bit that's just a bit of text, you can't quite click it, Google's going to have an accessibility issue with that link and all this kind of stuff. But anyway, we've done one out of eight. There's loads I could comment on this. I completely agree. It's going to be my closing statement on your first point. Point number two, let's move on to number two. What's number two on your list?
Number two is pricing, right? And when I say pricing...
Pricing, of course.
Because every e-commerce store owner is addicted to... That's another favorite word of mine, addiction, right? So they're addicted to...
To sales, are you going to say, and discounts?
Insane discounts, promo codes. Oh, let's make sure that we appear on all the coupon sites because there are affiliates, right?
Yeah, because all of that's unique, isn't it? That's a USP. No, yep. It's not. Everybody's on them.
Yeah. And when you do that with your brand, what you're doing is you're devaluing all the efforts that you put into the product, into your brand, into all of these work that you have done. Discounting and promo... You could use it strategically to actually get that ridiculous uplift. For example, this is a gigantic example, but there are other brands that actually follow in the same footsteps here. Apple is a fixed price. Regardless of where you go in the world, you pay the same price, right? And then when there's back to school promotion, for example, or Father's Day or Mother's Day, they go like, oh, this one product, we're gonna give $20 off. What happens to that $20 off? Everybody's buying. They're just giving $20 off a $1,500 phone. And people get excited about the $20 that they're getting, right?
Yep.
So understanding that, like, you're not training the consumer to wait for your next sale. They know that, you know, because you have done such an amazing job with your product, right? What is unique about your product? And even if you're selling a commodity product that you picked off of AliExpress, And then you're reselling it under your own brand name, like private label, or even just putting your, you know, whatever you're doing to market it differently, you can ask for more, right? The one example that I use to keep it very simple is I have a cat, right? And this cat, I love her to death. Her name is Heather. It's a real cat. It's not fictional cat, you know? It's not Garfield, you know? So I have this water fountain example that I use, a cat water fountain, right? Now for this cat, on this product page or even on a website on my Shopify, I can tell a story about me and how much I love cats and how I have cats since childhood, and I can even name them and timeline and photos and stuff. What am I doing? I'm creating an emotional connection with the consumer that's visiting me, right? And my current cat, her name is Heather, right? Beautiful, beautiful cat, really furry. So when I'm trying to sell this cat water fountain that you could find on AliExpress by anyone, the thing is, what you cannot find is me on that generic listing, right? On mine, I'm telling my story. I'm showing my cat drinking from that fountain, playing with other toys, you know, celebrating her birthday and other sorts of whatever things that I do in our life. I just put a smile on your face because you're imagining this thing in your head right now, right?
I'm also having flashbacks to having the same conversation with lots of my clients. That's the other reason I was smiling. But I think just to comment is, I think you're absolutely right. We had conversations with a few clients back during Black Friday last year, where we said, like, this, you're discounting too much. You claim to be a luxury brand. You know, someone could spend $700 on a jumper from your store, just one single jumper. And what you should be talking about is the quality of that jumper, but most importantly, the benefit to the person buying it, the story. When someone says, that's a nice jumper, and you go, well, let me tell you about my jumper. And you want to tell them because you've engaged in this story. And I guess the only other thing I'd add to that, that I say this quite a lot on the podcast, is that marketing is entertainment. Like, retail is a leisure activity. Shopping, you know, going out shopping, unless maybe it's your food shopping or you're going to the pharmacy or the chemist, that's a different type of shopping. But even then, that could be fun. But if you're going out clothes shopping, buying, I don't know, furniture for your house, it's an exciting process. You know, who's not been to a big furniture store and sat on 100 sofas and gone, this one's quite bouncy, this one's quite soft, this one's too low, this one's too firm. It's a whole experience. And I think you're absolutely right. I think if you're only, as a store owner, if you're just reliant on discounts, it's a race to the bottom. So you're going to run out of margin soon. And so are all your competitors. And that, where does that leave everybody? Like, you've ruined the industry. And secondly, yeah, I think that emotional connection, that's one of probably 50 things that you could do to get someone to buy a product without discounting it, for all the reasons I think you listed very well. It's the way discounting can be so dangerous.
And understanding the pricing strategy, right? When to bring things out, when to celebrate, right? Right now, when we are recording this, Easter Sunday is coming up, for example, right? Understanding, if does your customer do anything with Easter and your product? If you have a good understanding of it, then you could do something more promotional in that perspective, right? And then you'll get rewarded for it. And then your ROAS is going to increase on your paid channels that you have, right? As well as if you go into your database and you target those people, your customers or prospects that you have in your list, you will get rewarded for it handsomely for that. And you have to be, when it comes to pricing, customer segmentation is really important. Your list segmentation is really important. Understanding, do I really give this to everybody? Is it a site-wide promotion I want to do? Or is it a targeted thing I want to change behavior in? For example, there is one customer segment I call one-hit wonders. Nick, you know the song Macarena, right?
Yeah, yeah, of course.
So that was a one-hit wonder, right? You have customers that are one-hit wonders, meaning that they came to your site one time,
but yeah,
they made a purchase, and this is going to actually give some PTSD to some of your listeners. I would like them to go into Shopify under the customer tab, under segments, right? Put in number of orders equal to one, not greater or equal to one, just one. They just, in the lifetime of that customer, they placed one order. If you see that number, if you look at that segment and Shopify comes back with the percentages, right? When you look at all of your segments, and for that one, if it tells you 80%.
The customer cohort analysis. That's the thing you want to look at. It's the customer cohort analysis. That's the ticket.
Yeah.
That's the graph.
70, 80%. If it says a big number, you don't have a business. I'm sorry. You don't have a business. What you have is a transactional business, basically. And that means that likely, given my experience, likely you have been buying that transaction, not a customer. So you cannot call it customer acquisition. You can call it transaction acquisition if the number is very high. That literally you're buying transactions from Facebook ads or Google ads. And I hope, I really strongly hope that there's a margin in that. Because that's it. That person, you never remarketed to them. You never did anything to them. In some categories, it makes sense. If you're trying to sell cars over your Shopify site or air conditioning and stuff like that, which purchases legitimately, the consumers are not buying on a monthly basis. That makes sense. But most businesses have some sort of retention built into their product, meaning that they can replenish, it runs out. The vitamin bottle ran out, right? You mentioned the chemist earlier. The detergent ran out. The soap runs out, right? These are all replenishable products, but do you have your marketing aligned with that, you know, that your pricing? So with the one-hit wonders, what I tend to do with my clients, well, when I come across them and I know that they didn't do this because they didn't do the one-hit wonder strategy, right? I know that. And the number is ridiculously big, like 60, 70% of their list, meaning that the rest of it, 30% of their list has bought a second time or more, just a second time. If I even break that down to only two purchases, that's going to be a big number too. And number three would be less than that, and on and on and on. A healthy business should have good customer acquisition, but you should have a very strong retention. You know, I know that there is a popular saying that it's a lot cheaper to keep a customer than to acquire a new customer, right? Everybody who's taken a marketing 101 course knows that, right? But in practice, most people don't do that.
No. I think what's the cost of an email to get someone to buy a second product versus the cost of how many people you need to get clicks from to get one order from Google Ads, Facebook Ads? I think the other thing I would say that I think is really interesting about pricing, and you mentioned about segmentation here, is that top tier of customers, if you've done your retention well, that top tier of your customers will be providing a huge amount of your revenue. So if they're providing a huge amount of your revenue, you need to be very, very careful about how you keep them engaged. Because, and we did this as a test with a client, we said, could that top like 20% of customers, the ones that buy every month without you doing anything, they just come back. So do we just let them keep doing that? Do we try and put discounts in front of them to encourage them to buy more frequently? The conclusion in this situation was no, we don't think they're going to buy more frequently than monthly. So we need to focus on how do we increase their basket value. Not, they weren't interested in discounts or anything else like that. They were much more interested in, you know, what's the most exclusive product. And these guys, they've been just ramming discounts down everybody's throats, going like 10% off, 20% off, 30% off, all these different sales. And they said, you're a lifetime VIP customer, so we're going to give you 50% off in this exclusive sale. And I was like, if you didn't offer that, I reckon most of them would have paid full price anyway. And if you got just over half the amount of orders at full price, you've sent less products out and made more money.
There is operational cost at sending those orders out.
Absolutely. Warehousing costs, postage costs, a lot.
Why aren't you treating those customers that you just mentioned to me as your VIP list?
Yeah, absolutely.
And what do you do for your VIP? You roll out the carpet, right?
Free products, exclusives, everything.
When you roll out the carpet, doesn't mean discounts, right? Rolling out the carpet might mean that first dibs I'm going to give, 24-hour pre-sale I'm going to give to on my Black Friday to this group. If I'm a fashion brand, when the new thing comes in, the new collection comes in, I'm going to do private viewing, meaning that I'm going to create the collections page. It's not going to be linked anywhere. I'm going to take that link. I'm going to send it only to this group of people. They can get their first dibs, so that, you know, women size 6, you know, because that's a popular brand for women, right? I mean, the proper, it's a popular size, US size 6, right? That's very, very popular, that they can get their first dibs before it gets sold out. For men, if it's pants, it's 36 by 30 is an average, you know, size for US male, right? So that kind of stuff, why aren't you doing these private events? How about a private live Q&A with you, with the founder?
Absolutely.
You can keep them engaged and go like, oh, you know what? We have this thing coming up. We're going to be only sharing it with our VIP group of people. Zappos did an incredible job at this for the customers that kept on buying from them. They put them in the VIP list, and I was one of those VIPs. So when I placed my order, I could select standard shipping. They would overnight it to me.
Yeah, absolutely. The other thing I've seen that's really powerful with VIPs, just as another idea, I love all the ideas you've given, and we do those kind of things for clients quite a lot, or clients do it where they say, we're going Black Friday, and we say VIPs, 1 week early access before anybody else. It doesn't even have to be discounted. It could just be, here's our Christmas range. and you can shop the Christmas range before anybody else. The other thing that works really well is that whole personal shopper experience. If the customer's worth enough, you as the founder or CEO, just email them. Just every month, just spend half a day and email your top 50 or 100 customers. Email them, hey, I saw you bought this last month. I hope you've enjoyed it. Could you send us a picture of it in your house? Sounds great. How was your skiing holiday? Because you know they're going skiing because they told you that. Ask all these questions, you know, get all this engagement going. They're going to buy from you for life. Imagine going to someone comes over to your house and says, that candle smells amazing. And you say, oh yeah, Stephen, the founder of Keep Candles, who's someone we've had on the show who does this. Stephen told me this is exclusive scent and they only had 50 of them and he sent me one for free.
Yeah.
So I'm buying from them for life. And it's, what did that candle cost Stephen? Like £20?
It's how you treat your customers, literally. And treatment doesn't mean discount codes. So that's the pricing dimension. This is a great conversation, but the thing is, we could go on for 3 hours.
We could. Tell us number three. What's number three?
Number three is marketing. So the reason marketing is a dimension here is because in most cases, I would say 98% of cases with e-com store owners, to them, marketing goes back to pricing. Pricing is sales. It's not marketing. Marketing, most people don't do. Most brands, most store owners, they don't do marketing properly. Marketing is about story building, you know, and storytelling, right? And that happens typically, like if you do a great job of it, it typically happens in this Stephen example you just gave, right? When you are not in the room. That means that your marketing is really strong because you've done a great job of storytelling, right? So marketing as storytelling mechanism, and storytelling could take many forms. A website is an obvious one, but social media is another one. YouTube is another one, right? Email marketing and continuing to build these kind of live Q&A type, you know, ask me anything type every Thursday afternoon. That's all part of your storytelling, all of it. And building the content around it to really enhance that. Like the example I even gave about the, you know, about my cat. And if I'm doing that AMA session and every Thursday on Facebook, right? When people, other cat lovers show up and they see me, the cat is right on my shoulder and I'm going like this and it's like crawling against in front of my camera and stuff like that. And I'm talking about, oh, you know what? I found this other thing. Maybe I found something that I don't sell, but I found that when I got this thing, her fur is so much softer now, right? Because I can remove all the dead hair and stuff like that. So I'm engaging and I'm building that story strongly. If you're a coffee brand and if you go out to the field and you're getting these the coffee beans that you're cultivating and stuff like that, you're talking to the farmers, you are showing how sustainability and this and that and organic. I'm saying that don't make up stories, be authentic, you know, because the consumer is very smart these days, right?
Yeah.
If you're faking it, they know that you're lying, right? If you hate cats, and you're selling cat fountain, you know, water fountain, and you're saying that, and in none of your pictures, nothing you have, no video, no proof that you ever touched a cat because you're maybe highly allergic to it. You just love the revenue
just
you're getting from
products
it.
Products on a white background, super boring. Anyone can do that and you've lost your edge. I mean, that is, certainly from a marketing point of view, no edge there at all.
So the storytelling needs to be authentic. You need to build on it. It takes time to build the right story and have the mechanism to build on that content regularly, right? And the thing is, when I started this back in 1995, you didn't have social media. You didn't even have Google, you know, to be frank. You know, you had Alta Vista and Yahoo back then. But in 2008-09, we had the emergence of and a more mass adoption of social media, and now you had a platform where you could actually share with the world. I know that there are arguments, and my former co-founder says, oh, it's less than 1% organic reach, Gary Vee, right? But the thing is, what are you doing with that even less than 1%? Yeah, you could, if you have followers, you could put some paid behind it so that the rest of your followers, the other 99% can see it too, with very little spend, but they could also see your message. So what are you doing? But not, you know, blaming the 1%, and not doing anything for it, you're just like, it's inevitable that when there are iOS 14 update or what happened last week with delivery issues and stuff. And in fact, you can go to metastatus.com and you could see that if you look at the ad delivery, there's a whole list of chronological outages that they have had. So this is not a regular issue, but last week was really bad. The week of March 18 was really bad. So, you know, that's why you cannot have this over-reliance on just paid ads and this and that. You have to build your organic channels. You have to have multi-channel and you have to focus on multiple things, because when that happens, you say, okay, you know what? Facebook is down. No problem. Let's pause that. Let's go over here to Google Ads and push that. Or let's reach out to our affiliates or reach out to our influencers. There are things like that that you could build out. And also, worst case scenario, the easiest thing you could do, social post and go into your email. Go into your email and that you can make that revenue back for the week.
If social was just 25% of what you were doing, so you had four marketing channels instead of one, and that goes down, running at 75% of sales, most businesses are still profitable and you can survive a few days, a week, maybe even a few weeks like that. If you're like 100% reliant on Facebook, you know what's going to happen. But I'm glad marketing's number three, obviously, because it's what we do a lot of. But I use the phrase a lot, and I'm going to try and capture this in a patent somehow and write a book on it. But my catchphrase is literally marketing has been lost from digital marketing. People get too obsessed about some of the things you've just listed in exactly the right way of like, I'm so obsessed with just how do I get a product in front of people and how do I get the most Facebook traffic in, the most Google traffic in. You've got to sell something that makes an emotional connection. And hence why we spoke earlier as well about, you know, underpricing, kind of why buy something, you know, that unique element, that USP. I'm the only person that offers this as a product, so you've got to come buy it from me. But in the interest of time, number four, let's crack on into the next one.
Product positioning and brand building. It goes back to that storytelling, but besides the brand part of it being you or the brand itself and what your ethos and what you stand for, right? The product positioning, every product that you come up with, this is the other sin. I would call it sin. It's more than addiction, right? It's more sin, right? Because your competition yep. has 25 different products and you happen to have five products. Our ailment is because we don't have the other 20 products. That's why we are not winning in the market in our category, right? Absolutely garbage. How do you know that your competition is making very bad decisions? You think your competition is smarter and they have these 20. They probably are going bankrupt because they're not marketing it properly. They're not giving it enough time. Now you want to follow in their footsteps to do the same thing. And then you introduced, maybe you didn't introduce 20 more, you introduced five more. Now you doubled your portfolio. Like, I have five children, right? I'm doing okay. Because my neighbor has 20 children, I go like, okay, you know what? Let me get five more children. What happens when you have 10 kids?
Meltdown.
More mouths to feed, more water usage, more utilities, more schooling, more everything, right? The same applies to products. Treat each one of these products with more respect when it comes to product positioning. Like, why are you coming up? Not why your competition came up with it, because you're not your competition. I can point to two fashion companies that are in the same category, right? But two of them have completely different product positioning. So you cannot point to the competition and go like, oh, they're great. I've seen a lot of that competition over my 25 plus years now. That they go out of, they go bankrupt. So ideas are bad ideas. Bad strategies are bad strategies, right? It doesn't matter if you're competition, and they might be, if you follow the 80-20 rule, probably the top, whatever, 20% of their portfolio is generating 80%. And the other 80% of waste of time and money and resources and order fulfillment and all of the operational costs and marketing costs and all of that goes into that, right? There's a ton of wastage. If they're not controlling it well, you know, you don't have to do anything as competition. You can just see them like burn up very quickly and burn out. Yeah, so don't follow in their footsteps. Understand, like, why are you coming up with it? You, why did you come up with it? If you're in the coffee business, just because everybody has whole beans and ground beans and infuse this and infuse that. No, you tell me, what is your strategy? You want to add this one extra product. What is your strategy specifically? When we come to dimension four, we rationalize the actual product catalog. If we see that, you know, the 80-20 rule, if we see that number is like, ridiculously high, there is operating costs to storage fees and other types of things like that you have to take into account. Like, there's a cost to having this extra 80% of inventory that you cash sitting in your warehouse, right? Literally sitting in your warehouse. It's not cash flow, it's cash dead. It's like literally sitting there,
it's locked,
not doing anything. And God forbid, if there's an expiration date on that inventory, then it doesn't matter if you try to do clearance, people are don't want to buy expired, I don't know, or expiring, I don't know, whatever food you're trying to sell, right? That's not going to work. So you have to be smart at the get-go, like, and be very smart about how you need to position that product so that it doesn't have these kind of negative implications to your business.
Yeah. I think one thing I'd add to that as well, and this kind of comes from Google Shopping and all my work in that over the years, is we worked with a brand years ago, and I actually founded it and then worked on it, and we ended up shutting it down because it was a nightmare. But exactly what you've just described is what we found, where we started with two pairs of sunglasses. And we just started with those. We're just going to be a sunglasses brand. So we then launched a load of other sunglasses. And my ego got in the way. I was so excited. We're going to have thousands of ranges. So I was like, we're going to add 40 different types of sunglasses. And exactly as you've just described, these were like better products, more luxurious, but we didn't position them very well. We just kind of chucked them on the website. And they were quite different to the original two. And people kept buying the original two. One of them would sell about 70% of our sales. The other one was about 20%. And the last 10% was across all of these. If we sold one of them, I was like happy, but also like slightly kind of relieved that they're like, okay, we've actually sold something. And a good job I didn't get many quantities of quantities in stock of them, because no one bought them. So what we did instead is the original two pairs, the one that was selling like 60, 70% of our product sales, we actually created, and this is the key here, is we created about 20 variants of that same pair because it was so popular. So when you went on our site, if you looked at a collection of that product, it was a whole collection of it. So with 20 variations of it, different lens colors, slightly different wood tone, but the same shape. And then we even did the sizes of how far back they came on your ears and everything. And then we did slightly different sizes of the fronts. The factory had an absolute breakdown when we said we wanted to do this, because it was like an Alibaba, we'll just make our sunglasses and put your logo on it. But it was a game changer when we managed to get them to agree to this. And even of the variants, we knocked it from 20 down to about 3 or 4. But just that whole exercise was like, you don't know what you don't know. If we had known that in the first place, just adding those 4 new dimensions would have been incredible. But we widened our sales massively, because some of the things people were saying is they look too big for me, too small. Well, part of our content now was, we'll get them in the right size. And some people said like, oh, they've got brown lenses. It doesn't really suit my hair color or my skin tone or whatever. It's like, well, you can get black lenses now. You can also get like mirrored lenses if you really wanted those. And mirrored ones became really popular, even though I said how crap they looked when we first started. So, rubbish. Who wants mirrored sunglasses? Really popular. And so what did I know? But anyway, in the interest of time, number five, what's number five on the list?
So number five is customer UX. So we addressed our marketing, our story building, our product, right? Our performance optimization, our site looks great. Customer user experience is dimension number five. Now, you can't treat everybody the same. You can't, right? And your site shouldn't be doing that either. You have to recognize who your customers are. And based on knowing who your customers are, or customer types or personas, whatever term you want to use, customer profile, right? You have to address it. And each customer would be different. For example, your product could be used by 6 different professions, let's say, or six different people, right? Somebody who is at house most of the time at their home, somebody who is at their office, some people use it at the playground, some people use it in their professional kitchen, right? Let's say if your product is versatile and it uses are vast like that. Does your product pages and your site address them and recognize who they are? And you have to deliver on that. That's on the product, that part of the dimension of customer UX, right? But you also have to look at the customer UX with the example I gave of the one-hit wonders. Are they prospects? Did they buy one time? Did they buy two times? Did they buy 5 times? Did they buy 16 times? That's your VIP list, right, for your business.
That would be lovely.
Like, are you treating them differently, and are you giving them a different experience? With tools like Klaviyo is a very popular tool that goes with Shopify, right? Most people have those two things going together. It allows you to do all those things. It's just a matter of creating them. You could create standalone manual campaigns, or you could create Klaviyo flows, right? And there are other tools like even Shopify email itself, that's a built-in native one, allows you to do marketing automation, and you could do one-time campaigns too. Are you building those kind of things in? There are also Shopify apps that do AI-based personalization and customization on these product pages, depending on who's coming to your site and where are they coming from. At the least, if you know geography and you know that if it's raining somewhere and you sell umbrellas, right, are you treating them differently when people show up to the, to your page? And you could use AI-based, you know, apps that actually look at weather systems and say, tell you if it's a weather-based thing, right? So, or even if you sell hair products, and it's ironic that I'm shaved head and I'm saying hair products.
I wasn't going to say anything.
And I've run multiple hair product businesses, actually. So that's more irony on top of it. So if you are even selling hair products for certain groups of customers, when it rains, it's horrible for their hair. Their hair puffs up like this. That nuance, understanding that nuance, actually, that person, when they show up to your site, they have a smile on their face. They go like, how the hell did they know that, you know, that it's raining here or my hair is puffy? Because at that time, emotionally, they are not feeling great because their hair is puffy. But you're recognizing that that's what's going on in either a subtle way or a very obvious way, right? So customer UX is the fifth dimension. Understanding the nuances of your customer and optimizing for that, you can get a tremendous amount of growth. In this 12-week program that we have, the accelerator program, right? A Rapid 2X accelerator program, we spend about 12 weeks. And in the first 5 to 7 weeks, we address these five dimensions I just mentioned. And in most businesses, I can say that on average, the 60 to 70% of growth, we see it in the first five dimensions.
Nice. The thing I would add to that, which we do in literally within Google itself, I've written some scripts myself that my whole team use now. And these scripts, it will literally look at stuff, as you say, like the weather. And we have a client, for example, where in their Google Shopping feed, we've just added what's called a custom label. It's just a tag on each product saying, is this a hot weather product, a cold weather product, a wet weather product, or a doesn't matter weather product? And depending on what the weather's doing, all our budgets start adjusting. And we've got this down using the API. We've literally got this down to like time of day in some situations. So in the UK, we've got them because we're in that lovely small island. It's basically either sunny or raining. We have nothing in between.
I've been to
it's
London.
Sometimes both at the same time. Yeah, it's literally like that all the time. So if it rains, we are advertising things like home insurance more often. Because if it's raining and you've got a leak in the roof, you're like, oh my gosh, is my house insured? That's the time you're going to start looking at it. If it's like Ferrari or convertible car insurance, we advertise that. Guess when? The sun's out. And everyone's like, oh, it's a lovely day. I might take the car out. Oh, that reminds me. The insurance runs out next week. I need to sort the insurance out. So there's these little pinpoints and obvious stuff like, you know, swimming pools for the garden, outdoor garden furniture. No one's buying a barbecue when it's cold, snowing and raining. And that's obvious. But we literally in real time, by the time I've even got into the office in the morning, I've not even checked the weather today. All our campaigns have adjusted to go, it's a nice sunny day. So people are thinking about ripping their roof off the house and doing an extension. So we're going to advertise roof extensions and all the products you'll put in there. Or if someone's recently been Googling roof extensions, when it's a nice sunny day, we will talk about things like Velux windows to put in the roof or products to put up there because you've now got a new room to furnish. So you might want a new bed and some new chairs, some other stuff. So we found all these little pressure points and worked out what the weather's doing, the times of day, etc. Google claims, and Facebook does the same with Advantage Plus, Google claims that Performance Max does all this for you. It doesn't. I've done tests. We've run A-B tests. I've released studies. I've even had an email from Google saying, you've made quite a serious claim there. Can you confirm your claim? So I did, and they never heard back from them. So yeah, we're quite independent from Google. We don't just do what Google tells us to. But you're absolutely right. That customer user experience, I think it's not just the weather, the time of day. It flows, I think, right the way through the business. Like, for example, one of our clients said, oh, we've stopped emailing our customers. No one opens our emails. So our first thing was like, okay, is it subject line? Is it something else? And then we started to look at the demographic and went, these people are either too old or too young for emails. They literally had a very old and very young audience and no one in the middle who uses email. So the older people, they needed a phone call. So what we started doing is actually phoning them and saying, hey, just a quick courtesy. And it was an automated call. This is an automated courtesy call just to say that your order from us is going to arrive tomorrow morning. Please make sure you're in because it's a large order. We will carry it into your house for you. If you have any issues, please press one. Otherwise, you can hang up. And that was it. And suddenly customer satisfaction went through the roof. Lifetime value. Like you say, people marketing when you're not even there, trying to do marketing. And to the younger guys, we started using like push notifications on Meta through Facebook Messenger or through Instagram or something like that. So we started doing that or sending WhatsApp texts and texts out, but mostly WhatsApp messages. That was the thing that people responded to the most. But it took us a while to work out what wording or for the client to work out what wording to put in a WhatsApp because you don't normally get a delivery notification on WhatsApp. So we needed a system that first of all checked, are they on WhatsApp? And you can put someone's number into WhatsApp and it tells you. So we needed a system to do that. And then the second thing was then making sure the wording was just right. Say, hey, this is a courtesy message from Stephen at such and such a brand. I'm just using Stephen as a random name. I'm just letting you know that your order is going to arrive tomorrow at the... And young people in the UK now are using collection points. They don't order to their house. They don't order to work. They order it to a collection point, like at a local gas station or a local supermarket or something.
And they go pick it up.
And go and pick it up. Exactly. What's number six on your list?
So six is tech. Because we are in e-commerce, everything is tech, right? If your tech is not right, and what do I mean by that? If you have an idea and you cannot execute it immediately means that you conceived it Monday morning and by Monday afternoon, you want to launch it. If this was 1995, you could take 3 months to work on it. If it was 2008, you could take 2 weeks to work on it. But in 2024, if you thought about it, you should be able to do it in a couple hours, right? It doesn't matter how complicated it is. If you want to test it out, there's an app developer that created the app. You can go rent it. Or you could, if you want to build it yourself, you could build it. Or if you're especially in the performance optimization phase, those optimizations, you should be able to do it in a couple hours, right? Not weeks. So if your web developer is telling you that it's going to take 2-3 weeks to get through this list, whatever this list is, right? The answer is you have the wrong platform, right? The time to market is key. And you have to think about not just the cost of owning the platform, because one of the best arguments I hear, and I'm an open source guy, so, you know, I love open source. But the thing is, when you're running a business, if something like on that WordPress or WooCommerce is going to take 2-3 weeks to do, and comparatively speaking, if I were to do the same thing on Shopify, takes me 2 minutes, right? That means it's clear indication that maybe the WordPress or WooCommerce is an overkill for me. Even though at the onset of it, it was free because it's open source. But the thing is, you need an ISP. What happens if there are version upgrades? What happens in the case of keeping that server up? If your bandwidth increases 10x, right, during the holidays, you're on one server, right? And you're not scaling properly. So there's a ton of reasons that are not just initial monetary. You have to think about total cost of ownership of the tech, as well as time to market. You have, because both are going to cost you. And in most cases that I see, that there is no reason for you to have that like super customizable platform. It has its place in certain categories. Don't get me wrong. If your products are hyper personalized, right? And you have a lot of widgets and stuff like that. There is a reason for it, you know, and then I would actually recommend to go with the WooCommerce route, right? In that scenario. Other than that, you should look at Shopify or Shopify-like platforms that give you access, because Shopify has such a rich ecosystem of apps and stuff like that. It's a no-brainer. If you go on any marketing platform or advertising platform, you see the green icon for Shopify there, right? And then rarely you see the other ones, you know? And even platforms like TikTok Shop, Shopify was the first one that they partnered up with to get that going, right? So there are things like that where it comes to time to market or even testing out new things. The tech stack that you have should be, and when I say that, it's not just, because I see also people made the right decision with Shopify or Shopify-like. There are a few others that are really good too. Those kind of platforms, but then the add-ons are the wrong, the wrong apps, right? You have to do your homework, and especially there's a lot of tech reasons why that 1.7 seconds that I mentioned in a performance optimization suffers with you having no control over fixing it, because they are hosted on bad servers, slow bandwidth, slow networks. It takes so many hops, very technical stuff, right? So many hops to get to their servers. There's a ton of reasons like that, that you would do the performance optimization, but then you come to this dimension and you know that you have the wrong tech stack.
Yeah. I couldn't agree more.
We go through everything else though, the other five, because number six, this tech dimension may require some investment, but I can tell you, like, even if you go to a Shopify dev, design shop, right? They say, oh, you know what? For me to move your WooCommerce over to Shopify, $15,000-$25,000 or €10,000 or €20,000, right? Something like that. I can tell you that you're wasting more than that on an annual basis and losing sales by not doing it, right? Yeah. So when it comes to this stack, you have to be very smart. And even one big advice for Shopify, because this show is Winning with Shopify, right? All the Shopify owners, when you add an app, and let's say you listen to my performance optimization, you got it down to like B or an A, right? It's 1.7 to 2 seconds, right? Perfect. You're in a beautiful place. Then you go like you're itching for that next app you want to add because somebody said this AI-based thing is so cool.
And it starts plummeting.
You add it on, run the GT metrics as soon as you add it, before you customize anything or anything like that. Once you put it on, run the GT metrics immediately.
See what it says.
If you see that B or an A tank down to D or E, remove it. Remove it, reach out to the team or the app developer and go like, hey, I just added to my site. Your app specifically took my GT metrics performance from A or B to a D. Because you know that the benefit of that AI thing that you are adding or the app you're adding outweighs, right? It's just like, No thanks.
Because you want to be forwards, not backwards.
I would rather not have this app and have a better performance. And it's going to mess up my conversion rate. It's going to mess up my everything that I do here, right? Everything, including my FB, ROAS and ACoS and all of that stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. To tech, something I really want to add on this, because I think you've hit a key point, but a really sore point for some people is like, that app example is exactly it. I spent all this time optimizing this app, get this thing to work, scores have dropped. And actually, if the score drops, what happens to your SEO rankings, your revenue? As we were saying earlier about bounce rates, do they start to go up? And you start pointing at the wrong things because you didn't keep a record of like, it was that app that did it. With the apps, if anyone's sitting there thinking like, do you know what? I don't know what app to get to do this new thing that I want to do. I don't know if the apps I'm using at the moment are the right thing. I mentioned right at the start about us asking all of you guys for some help and some feedback on what you're doing at the moment. This is something that has come up, which we were not expecting, which is why we're doing this round of feedback. And we were not expecting so many of you, almost all of you, to say, yeah, I don't know what apps to install. I don't even know what apps are running half the time. If you gave me a list of all the apps in the code, they've all got different names to what they've got on Shopify. I don't know what's going on. It's a mess. And then we start to run the GT metrics or Google PageSpeed scores and go like, oh my gosh, how much JavaScript can this page actually take? Because it's already really big. If you're having that issue, even more so, just to plug that form again, please go to winningwithshopify.com/help and book a time to talk to my colleague, Lee. This is something that's come out that we are investigating ways that we could start supporting you all, possibly for free, possibly cheaply, but support you guys with what apps you're looking at, because you're absolutely right, Sabir. This is one of the biggest and most crucial parts of Shopify, where I think that Shopify have tried to create something so beautiful and healthy in the app store, but so many store owners, myself included, when I used to run my store years ago, shiny objects. Oh my gosh, I could add a chat widget, and you just add it and you've missed.
By the way, Nick,
as you say,
you didn't add one chat widget. You added, or app, you added three of them.
Yeah, exactly.
There are, from my experience, that's what I see. Go like, okay, which one are you using? Oh, we don't use any of them.
You add three and only two of them are inactive.
Why do you have it?
Yeah, absolutely. So, but I think if people have done the first five things you've said correctly, when they get to tech, and I think you've done it in the right order, when you get to tech, then you know what app you're thinking of adding, and you know that we need a chat app, and we're going to test four of them one at a time, like you've just said, we do them one at a time, and we're going to check what their page load is, and maybe the one we decide is the one we're going to go with. Now let's roll it out as an A-B test. So only 10% of our traffic will see the chat widget. What percentage of them actually use it? What's the experience when they do use it? Are we manually responding to that, which means they have to wait 2 minutes before we're available, which is a good or a bad thing, depending on where it is. If they're getting an update on their order, which they've already placed, they might wait 5-10 minutes for someone to be available. If they're thinking of buying it, that 1.7 seconds you mentioned on the webpage, it's probably only a couple of seconds more before they're like, no one's going to reply to me. Go to the other site that's got the information that I need on the landing page. But you don't know what they're going to ask.
Number one advice, Nick, there is that in the performance optimization phase, we do look at those apps because I see that people have installed 25, 30 apps. They think that it has no impact. It actually is slowing down the site.
Yeah, it's bad.
So in the performance optimization, when we see that, we do the process of elimination. Mm-hmm. First, we just ask, interview. Out of these 30, tell me exactly why do you think you're using these apps, right? You go through that, you find out that they really need like 8 of those apps, right? The rest of them, somebody they had hired from Fiverr 5 years ago had installed it and they thought it was a cool thing. There's a lot of that story. Insert whatever name, right? Agency, we had John work for us for 3 months and he was testing this thing out. They never removed it. So do elimination in that performance optimization when it comes to tech. This is also true with a lot of apps and add-ons people do with WordPress, you know, because either WordPress is telling them to do it, that it's a good idea, or sponsoring it or whatever. They think it's a recommendation. They do that, and then that increases the load. The other area within this tech, or even the process of elimination, is if you're not doing anything on Pinterest, for example, right? And it's a very specific recommendation. If you're not doing anything on Pinterest, why do you have the Pinterest app installed as a sales channel, right?
Yeah.
Or if your brand doesn't really have the audience on TikTok, why are you doing that? And those two pixels, right? The apps that do, whether they do conversion API or they do pixels, pixels are, by the way, as of this July of this year, it's going to be completely dead, right? So iOS 14 was the start of it. The complete debt, rest in peace, for pixels is this July, right? June or July. So when you have that, Pinterest is very heavy app. So as soon as you remove that Pinterest app from your Shopify, it's going to be lighter. But if you are let's say a female-centric brand, right? That's your customer. Pinterest is a no-brainer. It's a no-brainer. Even if it's heavy, you should have it because that's your audience. You're going to get the most ROAS out of it, more than Facebook. Pinterest is really great at e-commerce, like social commerce. They do a great job of that, right? So I'm not poo-pooing Pinterest, but if your brand doesn't really lend itself to that audience at all, you're not doing anything. Like if you want to do something in future, okay, install it at that time so that even if you're paying penalty, it's fine. But don't install it ahead of time and think that, oh, you know what? I'm going to maybe use it someday. A lot of businesses I see, they don't do anything with it. There's no intelligence behind it. Like, okay, why are you using this? Oh, I just have the Pinterest ads account. So they asked me to install the thing. So I installed it. Like, why? Like, be intelligent and ask a ton of questions, like from developers, from anyone that touches your business, you know, ask them like, why are you installing this? Like, why is this here? And then you should, as an owner, run that GT metrics. Every time somebody touches your business, run a GT metrics because agencies...
see what damage they've done.
Some agencies have their own pixels or apps. Once they install it, your grade could come down. That means that your overall performance is coming down, regardless of whatever they're helping you with.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, look, we've got a few minutes left. We've got 7 and 8 to go through. Tell us what number 7 is.
7 and 8. 7 is logistics. Right? It doesn't matter how brilliant you are in all of the other dimensions.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
The last mile counts, right?
It's got to be slick.
When they place that order, make it a policy by 4 p.m. It needs to think of it like in America, they call it hot potato.
Get
right?
it out the door.
Think of it as a hot potato, meaning that you have to like pass it along to market. You know, the website needs to pass it along to the operations. Operations needs to order fulfill that and take it back and give it to your local carrier, right? In the United States, it would be UPS, FedEx, USPS. In other markets, like in Canada, it's Canada Post or whatever, right? In the UK, you have your Royal Mail, right?
Me too.
Whoever your partners are, you need to give them the product. Like it needs to leave. Like any orders that come in by 4 p.m., it needs to be pushed out, right? That you need to set up some sort of a policy and stick by it as if it means it's a life or death sentence for you, for your business, right?
And tell the customer as well. I think the customer needs to be in the loop in all those stages. Like I said earlier about the AI or phone call, WhatsApp message, you know, like choose the right medium, but you've got to tell people like, yeah, it's been packed. It's left the warehouse. It's going to be with you tomorrow, which is a day early. Hope that's okay. If not, click here. Like that's a really good correspondence.
The number one thing, by the way, is called WISMO, right?
WISMO.
Here. WISMO is where's my order?
Love that.
There's an acronym for it.
yeah.
Right? Whether they're asking you over live chat, email, phone call, Voodoo, doesn't matter, right? Whatever they're doing, you need to be on top of it. And then once you know that most of your orders, 90, 95% of your orders are leaving by 4 p.m., if you have received it by 4 p.m., then you can make that claim even on your website and say to the customers, if your order comes in before 4 p.m., or you could even do -1 hour, so by 3 p.m., we will ship it out the same day. And be mindful of Mondays because most businesses are closed, warehouses are closed on Saturday, Sunday. Would your fulfillment partner or your warehouse people, can they handle all that volume for 3 days on Mondays because it came before Monday, 3 p.m.? So it needs to leave the building. Black Friday, you know, when you 10X your business, you know, because you're doing 50% off and you're giving the shop away, Are you be able to handle that? Or now you're backed up for 2 weeks and now you have a lot of customer dissatisfaction. And when it comes to logistics, just one more point I want to make is logistics is not just customer service and order fulfillment. It's your manufacturing partner. It's your freight partner that brings the stuff in. And if you are also engaged in an Amazon FBA, that you have to ship that stuff out to Amazon FBA also to make sure that that happens. All of that is logistics, all of it. And everybody needs to like make sure that these things are like the handoffs are happening between these different functions that I just mentioned or these different dimensions.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I couldn't agree more. And I think the keeping people in the loop as stuff happens is always my big thing of like, people almost don't mind if something's going to be a day late. Just tell them. It's the unknown. The unknown kills people, and that's going to hit your lifetime value. All right, we've got a few minutes left. Number eight. We've got there. What is number eight? Talk us through it.
Number eight is your team, right? Like, I will blame in every business all these other seven dimensions. The team is the last one.
I couldn't agree more. Yeah.
Because the thing is, you have to get your house in order before you blame anyone. Mm. Right?
Yeah.
The other seven dimensions is getting your house in order to grow, right? And you have tremendous growth in every dimension I mentioned to you. But this one is going to set you apart completely, right? When it comes to the team, and let me define what the team is. The team is not just, because most people, when I say team, they think, oh, it's my full-time employees. No, that's a type of a team member. That's not your team. Your team is anyone that touches your business, anyone. For that tiny little project, for that Fiverr project that you hired that $50 person to do that content thing for your social media, whatever, that's part of your team. If you're growing Shopify business and your mom packs your orders on the weekends and she does the manufacturing, she's part of the team, right? Anyone that touches the agencies, you're part of a lot of people's teams, the brands that you manage, Nick. That's all team members. When it comes to teams, you have to make sure that humans are talking to each other. And since you are sitting at the top as a founder of that company, of that brand, 100% it's your responsibility. 100%. Can't blame anyone else. All the buck stops here, right? You should get one of those plaques right in front of your desk, wherever you're sitting, yeah. Right? Whether it's kitchen table or in a nice fancy 37th floor of a beautiful building, right? It's your responsibility at the end of the day. If marketing and logistics didn't talk to each other, your fault, right?
Yeah.
You need to make sure collaboration needs to happen. And in case of e-commerce specifically, for all Shopify business owners, the number one reason for fraud to happen in an e-commerce business because you're working with capital and you're working with products that have value, the number one reason is lack of communication between team members, right? Marketing does something like they did something questionable, they black hat SEO stuff or some kind of a weird audience that brought a ton of traffic, but it brought with it a lot of shady characters, right? And that's reality of business, right? Or even Advantage Plus went nuts and sent a bunch of criminals, right? So regardless of where it came from, right? Mm. I'm not blaming any of those platforms. But at the same time, you never told your 3PL partner that there is going to be an increase in volume because you're doing this.
Yeah.
Because everything has a cause and effect very quickly. It's not a traditional business. In case of e-commerce, when one thing happens, the other thing is affected by it. So your team needs to be talking on a regular basis. And when you say, oh, yeah, Sabir, but I got Slack channel. Slack is great, right? Yeah, Slack is great, but it's not in place of you giving leadership in that company. So you need to bring people in face-to-face. It could be over Zoom. That's fine, right? Because you have remote teams and whatever have you. It cannot be just text-based things that people are agreeing to. That's just task management. But when it comes to proper collaboration, jump on a Zoom call weekly. Every Monday morning, you're going to do a review of everything that's happening in the business. So everybody gets to talk to each other about what's going on so that you take the 90 minutes once a week, boom, your business is reset every Monday and you're addressing the issues you need to address that week. Or if it's upcoming opportunities like a big sale or big thing, new products that are landing in the warehouse, maybe the warehouse person says, we just got the update. It will be delivered today at 3 p.m. So marketing, if you want to do that social media post, go ahead and do it. That's how fluid the conversation needs to be. And collaboration and teamwork in that essence is not just a like a nice thing to say. And as a leader, you need to take that ownership as that, you know? And that means whether you're working with agencies, Fiverr people, Upwork people, LinkedIn freelancers, it doesn't matter, right? You're responsible for it and make sure that everybody is synced up. And if they are not getting on that Zoom call because there are Fiverr people and Fiverr people may not get on a Zoom call, that's fine. Then get the update. You will give the update on that Zoom call with the other people that do show up because they're part of other types of team members, you know?
We do it 3 times a week in my business. We go through every single client on a Monday. Like, and obviously we're a service-based agency, but it's the same concept of we make sure that like every single client's in a good space. If they're not, then it's like, right, mission this week, turn that client around. You know, last week wasn't good for them, or some tracking broke, or they've hired someone new, we don't know what they're doing, or something's gone wrong somewhere. It's like, well, we fix that this week. So within a week, it's like raised up a director level in our business. And we do that with some of our clients as well. You know, we used to send like Monday updates to everybody. What we started doing now actually is saying, we'll create an automated reporting dashboard for you and ping it out every Monday so you know what's going on. But it's available 24/7. And I think that just seeing that everything's working from end to end, from the impression we get to the click, to them landing on the site, to them buying a product, to them that product going out on time, to getting a good review, to getting a lifetime value increase from a repeat order, that's all mapped out in real time. And all that data is available to you now. It's a case of just having it there. But as you say, the team all need to be on board with that. We even have some clients that will say that, like one, for example, they send out an email at the beginning of week 4 of every month to say how this month is going. And if it's been really good, they'll actually say, can we lower budgets a little bit, save it for next month? Because we think it's going to be a bit slower. So we can keep ourselves profitable every month by doing that. It's a little very, very simple change, but really tactical. If we've not made quite enough, we'll spend a tiny bit more. We'll put another email out. We're just trying to hit that target whilst we also assess, why have we underhit this? You know, what channels dropped, what customer segments not buying from us, what products have underperformed, has something gone out of stock? All the things you've listed and all the other points. But that, Sabir, we've done it 90 minutes and we've done under 90 minutes, we've done an absolute crash course, I think, in e-commerce. Last question from me then to finish this off. You mentioned that you are doing something on Tuesday, more than one Tuesday as well. Tell us more about how people can come and engage with something for free with you.
So I do a free live workshop because I'd love to educate, and I would love to go into the case studies into when we are going through these dimensions and the specifics of it. So this upcoming Tuesday, we are doing a free live workshop. It's called a Rapid 2X live workshop that they can attend. You can include it in the show notes. It's growthbysabir.com/workshop. So they can just go to that link, register to attend, and we'll notify you when it's coming up and stuff like that. So they can attend that. And from there, that would unlock the relationship so that they get invited to a community, to join a community of Rapid2X. And they can also find out about the case studies and stuff like that on growthbysabir.com. We do have a paid program, coaching program, where I actually navigate these waters for 12 weeks with a group of Shopify entrepreneurs and Amazon sellers also. It's applicable to both platforms. So we can, they could see that if it's, they'll learn more during that live workshop. And if they see that if it's a good fit, then they could apply to be part of the Rapid2X Accelerator coaching program. That's 12 weeks under my guidance. Personally, I take them through those 12 weeks and they execute, but I'm advising them like every Monday.
Amazing. Amazing. Well, look, guys, if you want to reach out to Sabir and talk to him and spend time with him, go on that course, then obviously reach out. Amazing to talk to you, mate. I just want to say a massive thank you from me and the team for having you on today. And thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Nick, for having me. I had a blast, like I promised.
Exactly, which is what we like. And for everybody listening at home, yeah, if you've enjoyed today, hit subscribe, leave us a review on whatever platform you're listening to this on. If you haven't already, check out our YouTube channel. We're trying to push that at the moment. But most importantly, we want to talk to you guys. My colleague Lee is desperate to have a conversation with some of you. So go to winningwithshopify.com/help and book a time on there. Thank you so much for tuning in. We'll be back again next Friday.
Thanks for listening to today's podcast. You can subscribe to our weekly newsletter for exclusive offers at winningwithshopify.com. And don't forget to check out our Facebook group by searching for Winning with Shopify on Facebook. Over and out.